Do you have a tough challenge with your supply chain or logistics? Logui is the intelligent partner that works globally with manufacturers, retailers, and logistics businesses. We help our customers define, buy, and safely implement solutions across the supply chain. If you want a more sustainable future for your supply chain, visit loguru.co.uk. Complete end-to-end satisfaction guaranteed.
Coming up in this episode.
Tomorrow may not happen a week from now, a month from now, a year from now. But if you wake up every day and do the small things right and keep doing it consistently over a long period of time, good things happen.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining? And would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hello, and welcome to a new podcast from the Logistics Collective. Today, we're going on a bit of a journey, and we're moving all the way across to the West Coast of America, specifically the United States of America, let's be clear. We're going to Monterey County, and the largest town within there, which is a town called Salinas, which is Spanish for salt flats, and also happens to be the birthplace of John Steinbeck, and the resting place of John Steinbeck as well. So him of The Grapes of Wrath and East of Eden, and also of Mice and Men, which I studied during my high school times. And the language there within a Steinbeck novel is rich. The character depictions are really deep, and it's a little bit deep and dark because it was covering the Great American Depression and the Dust Bowls and sharecrop farmers and everything that was going on with them, but unbelievably well written. And interestingly enough, I have somebody today which helps support. Salinas is also known as the salad bowl of the United States of America. And I have today with me Colby Varley, who is, I guess, owner of a business that really is focused on helping all of the growers be able to get their products into market and do an awful lot of other things. So I want to say a warm hello to Colby and tell us about what you do.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. It's morning here, afternoon where you are. So thank you again for having me on today. But a little bit about ATS, Advanced Transportation Services. We specialize in transporting highly perishable food and produce all over the United States. This year is going to be our 40th year in business, formed in 1984. So we have a strong foundation, been doing it a really long time, great values, great reputation. And I had the opportunity to become the vice president and principal this year. So me and my partner are looking to take it another 40 years.
Well, many congratulations for your first 40 years and many congratulations for becoming vice president along with your working partner as well.
Thank you.
So look, what does working in the logistics and supply chain industry mean to you?
You know, it's really a lifestyle for me. I really couldn't imagine doing anything else. As you know, logistics is pretty much 24/7, 365. Today here in the United States is a holiday, Labor Day. We're working, we're loading, we're delivering. So it's really a lifestyle. Grew up in it, and wouldn't really know anything else to do.
So thinking about that, did you have a dream job as a child? I mean, what do you really want to do?
As a child, I was really more hands-on,
yep,
building things. And I thought maybe, hey, construction might be a good path for me. I was very hands-on, but my dad was in the produce business. And then right when I got out of high school, I got into the trucking, and I was always fascinated with that as a young child, hearing my dad talk to logistics providers and the things that were getting done all the time and moving loads from coast to coast. And I was always intrigued by that, but I never really saw myself getting into it to where I am now.
Okay. And so what was your first job within the industry then? What did you start doing?
So my first job, I worked for a local asset-based company doing local pickups here in the Salinas area. And that's really where I kind of got the bug and started learning how all this stuff works and what comes on a pallet and how many of them and what it looks like and what it weighs. And when you're in the driver's seat, you end up learning pretty quick.
Yeah. What then took you, driving? lot to be said for being a driver. What made you make the leap? You've gained the understanding of what this is all about. So what were your next steps?
Yeah, so I just had really good opportunity, but also a really good work ethic. And I think those two combined just put me in a lot of the right places at the right time.
Yeah.
Allowing me to kind of move up the ladder, in regards to, okay, you are a local driver, then learning how to load the trucks, driving the forklift, mixing the trucks. At that time, we were running all LTL, which is less than truckload, very complex, takes a lot of skill. So learning how to do that really pushed me along. And then after loading the trucks, being able to work in the night dispatch, and then going to the day dispatch, and then ultimately, I wound up doing sales and building the loads before, coming here to ATS and just focusing on sales and brokerage.
That's fantastic. It's always wonderful to see that journey.
Yeah.
And I think anything that anybody does, I'm actually going to disagree with many folks that might turn around and say, you don't need to work and understand how does everything fit together in order to be successful. Maybe that might be the case, but you won't have as deep an understanding and you won't see all of the opportunities that are in there, both to improve, but also to be decent and reasonable as well. I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% agree with you there. And it gives you a better, like you said, understanding, and you're able to solve problems for both your customers and your carriers a lot more efficiently. And also you have, a little bit more empathy on both sides, for the driver and for the customer, because, being a driver, you get to experience sometimes unfortunate things that do happen. And at the end of the day, everybody's human. So being able to be in each role gives you a much better understanding, and you can convey that to both sides.
Absolutely. 100% support you there. It's the right thing to do. We're all just trying to scrabble around making a living on this big old spinning blue ball in space. So I think that for me is the really key. Be kind, respectful, and decent to others. So Colby, when is the best time of day for you to do your work? What's your favorite time of day?
I'm an early bird. That's when I like to get a lot of, my more important things done here in California. If I can get going around 5 a.m., that's prime time for me. Unfortunately, it seems like it never really ends. It doesn't matter if you get out of the office at 2 or 3, the phone's still going to ring, but that's the job that it is. And I'm okay with that. But seems like if you really want to get some quiet time or some, like if I'm working on rates or something that really is going to take my attention, the earlier, the better.
Now you see, I'm at the opposite end of that. And I started my career in logistics and supply chain by being a production planner. And I tried it both early and late. And what I actually understood is that there was a night shift that was going to do its merry old own thing if they didn't get a lot of good instruction.
Yeah.
So I used to look for the latest lay of the land, and then I would issue, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. And the reason for that is that back in the day, you didn't have a telephone next to your bed. You had one that was a long way from your bedroom down in the hall. And I lived in a big old cold house, and I didn't want to go down those stairs at 3 o'clock in the morning to go and talk to somebody to say, well, what do we do next? But it's absolutely fine. I admire anybody that can have the joy of getting up early. But why are you so passionate about your current role and the business that you have?
I've just always been a competitive person, from growing up, high school sports, high school athlete, just always been somewhat competitive, and not to say that I'm competing against the industry, because it is a huge industry and there is enough pie out there for everybody, but it's almost competing against ourselves or against myself. Obviously we have KPIs and numbers that we see weekly, monthly, yearly. And it's like, hey, can we beat those? Like, can we get better? Can we get a better on-time delivery score? Can we get more loads tendered to us? So I think that's where it comes in. I'm just competitive. I want to do the best that I can. And obviously nobody's perfect and we're going to strive for that. But that's where that comes from, just being ultra competitive.
So thinking about that ultra competitive side to you, what has been your best career experience so far and why?
Best career experience? I would say that good things do happen. If you're doing the right things, it doesn't happen overnight. It may not happen tomorrow. It may not happen a week from now, a month from now, a year from now. But if you wake up every day and do the small things right and keep doing it consistently over a long period of time, good things happen. And I couldn't say that I put, you know, a finger on exactly one thing, because all the great things that have happened, you know, it's a combination of a lot of small little things happening to make, you know, where we are today. Doing the small things correctly every day.
Absolutely agree. And I think the logistics industry is a business. It is a business. It is an industry of detail. I often turn around and say it's manage the cents and the dollars will look after themselves. I don't entirely agree with that, but you have to keep a very, very close eye on the fine detail of what you've got. But thinking about that sort of yin and yang, so the best one is really about making those small steps and making and being in control of detail. What's the worst experience you've had and what did you learn from it?
It wasn't one of my loads, but there was a partner carrier of ours that had a team that passed away, in a horrific accident. And
that's tough.
Really quick reminder that, you know, 99% of the time, everything goes smooth and everyone arrives safe, but there is that 1% that things go wrong and, you know, people's lives are on the line, and just kind of brings you back to reality a little bit on the consequences of, you know, everybody knows the pressure that's out there from customers and getting the load there and, hey, we need it there. And it's like, you know, would you rather have it there a few minutes late or would you rather have it not arrive at all? Because someone lost their life pushing to get that shipment there. And don't get me wrong, I'm the first person to get it there on time, but there becomes a point where it's like, hey, this is unsafe. And, you know, that's got to be the worst experience that I've probably come across, is, you know, two people ended up losing their life on the road.
Those are always the points whereby you do see a fatality. And for me, having a career as long as mine, I've not had fatalities that I've been so personally connected with. But you had certainly heard of one subcontractor's driver just passing away. And others that you found that you've had some accidents whereby people have either taken their eye off the road or whatever it was, but they've hit something more solid than their truck. Without getting too much into that, I mean, I don't think we all have that point of pressure, but I think we've all got to have that conscience that turns around and says, I don't need this at any cost. You know, that's the key. That's one of the things of conscience that you know, you've got to bring into your business decisions really on a daily basis.
Yeah. And having the wherewithal to be able to explain that to a customer, especially when they're really in need of a shipment and, you know, say it didn't get loaded on time or whatever the case is, I mean, breakdown, whatnot, and you're doing everything in your power to get it there for them. And it's just, you know, sometimes it's not going to happen, you know, no matter how many resources you throw at it.
That's all too true. I mean, just reflecting, I mean, we all travel through this life and we have lessons that we learn, but what do you know now that you wished you would have known when you were in the early part of your career?
To not push it so hard, let it develop. Sometimes you can feel like you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole, and sometimes you can get it to fit with enough force, but it's not always the best fit. And sometimes saying, hey, you know what, let me take a second, let me step back. How else can I put this together to make it fit? Not that I've had really anything bad happen from it, but sometimes it's just, you know, it's added stress or pressure on myself or one of my vendors. And it's, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20, as they say. And after 14 years of doing it, you learn that and say, hey, maybe I'll take a different approach this time and find out that it works a little better.
All too true. All too true. I remember I had the great fortune of meeting somebody incredible in the industry. I will not name names, but it was during a trip to Hong Kong, and it was absolute logistician and entrepreneur, wonderful to meet, and shared dim sum with him, but then went to his headquarters and he had his business principles in tablets of stone on the wall. And he gets out his big manual, his operating manual, and he throws it in front of me and says, test me. And here is this multi-millionaire. And he's so invested within his business, really within there, and fascinating. And this is the great thing about this industry. It's filled with really, really interesting characters once you get out there. But it is taking those learnings and actually making your own tablets of stone from them, you know, because those tablets of stones were carved as a result of lessons learned. And that is always the case.
Absolutely.
So what's motivating you and your team right now? What's really gaining your attention?
What's really motivating us is the opportunity for growth. You know, you can hear all the trash here in America that the economy's so bad and, you know, nobody wants to buy and it's so hard to get a new account. And yeah, it's not easy. You know, there's a lot of things going on here that may or may not be a factor of why somebody's going to buy or not buy. But sales is just presenting a new idea to someone and some change. You know, it's really not much more than that. And if you're okay with someone telling you no, you know, there's plenty of people in the world. All you can do is present your opportunity and move on. And we've found that, you know, with what we're doing here, there's opportunity for growth and the team sees it and everyone's doing really well and really happy and just standing by what we believe in and what our niche is. We're not trying to go into any other market that we're, you know, not an expert in. We're really trying to just buckle down on the highly perishable food and produce, do really well at that. And, you know, the results are speaking for themselves.
And so in terms of your business, you're really, in theory, you're non-asset based. And you are acting as a control tower.
Correct.
Really, in order to be able to get your customers' produce really around the USA with multiple partners that you're actually working with. And so that's what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, there's only a few things that are going to separate us. Obviously, number one is probably communication. How well do you communicate? How easy are you to get a hold of? How easy is it to track a shipment with you? I mean, those are probably the top three things that we talk a lot about. We're not looking to be the cheapest guy out there. There's definitely a value when you come and work with us, and that's on both sides. You know, we're not looking for the cheapest truck either. We need a carrier that is going to pick it up on time, deliver it on time, and communicate from point A to point B. So, you know, those are kind of the factors that really separate you compared to anybody else.
Sure. And if I would ask you to have a think, let's say I was your customer or potential customer to you, and I've maybe got one of the big companies that I could go to, the ones that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange or whatever. What would be the difference that and the positive difference from your perspective of me working with you rather than working with one of the really big providers out there?
Honestly, it's the personnel, right? It's you working with us. You're going to be known on a first name basis. Your customer ID is not a number. All your shipments are important to us. You can call in and you're going, you know, you want to talk to, you know, one of my sales assistants or you want to talk to me, you're going to be able to talk to whoever you want. It's not, oh, I'm the salesman and then it goes to an ops and then it goes to carrier rep. And there's nothing wrong with that model. We just feel that we can provide better service to a customer with a cradle to grave style model. And we're big enough to where we can really do some damage, but small enough that it's a boutique style and the customer really feels like they're getting a value.
And there's a big amount of truth there in terms of, even for my past, in terms of looking at solutions that I've bought. And one of my key rules is I always want to place business with a company that actually really wants and values the business I'm going to bring to them. And I'm not just going to be another number.
Yeah.
And that's an opportunity for the small to medium-sized businesses out there to grow. But it's also an opportunity for the big players not to get completely absorbed by, you know, the really enormous contracts to say you've got to be able to work with some of the smaller customers out there and do that very successfully. But it is an absolute opportunity. And it's one that I deliberately took with a big European business and said, look, our scale of business is not going to be interesting to the really, really big global providers. Let's actually go and work with people that really want to do business with us. And I think that's important. I think personal contact is everything.
Absolutely.
It really is very, very important.
Absolutely.
So is there anything that surprised you about the logistics industry recently? Is there anything that is either worried about or happy about?
Not so much worried about, but I'm all about the technology. I think that it's just awesome that there's so much emphasis now in the tech space coming to the logistics sector. I think it was well overdue. And now we're almost, it feels like we're playing catch up at such a high rate of speed that it's almost too much, too fast. You know, it's kind of like getting hooked up to a fire hose and turning it on. There's so much new innovation, integration happening, which are all good things. You know, I mean, if a customer wants an update every 15 minutes via EDI, you know, we have the capabilities to do it now. I mean, that's just incredible. So I know there's going to be more to come, and I'm excited to see what other innovation comes out that's going to be helpful. But I think that's probably one of the most intriguing or best things that I've seen in the industry is the amount of technology on the forefront. You know, everyone's trying to get better, and that's the main goal for us, at least, is how do we get better? How do we provide a better service to our customer and to our carrier?
I think you're absolutely spot on. I think the key in terms of the technology within there is to really look at it to ensure that you're not getting functional overlap. So how many different systems do I need to buy in order to be able to get the actual solution that I need? And am I paying more than once to get duplication of functionality within there? And I think quite often, the tech industry needs to go and have a long, hard look in terms of its customer base to say, well, okay, what is really on the ground within that? But I do agree that the digitization of the logistics industry, arguably it's been underway for 40 years. But the truth of the matter is it's only beginning to gather what I would say the sort of pace that it's needed in the last 5 or 10 years or so. To be honest, I see entrants like Amazon coming into this, which is forcing an awful lot of right. logistics businesses to digitize and to actually raise their game in this area. I think that's interesting. It can be a challenge, but it's also every challenge has an opportunity, you know, really within that.
Yeah.
If you weren't working in the logistics industry and you could start another business tomorrow, what would it be in?
You know, I saw something when I had the opportunity. I got married 2 years ago.
Congratulations again.
And the wedding space is just insane. So I think if I could pick something and do it all over, it seems like maybe the wedding venue where you have a place that people come and rent it out. That was just, you know, obviously we looked at multiple options, and like everyone does, you look at where you want to get married and seeing the price points and, you know, what people are charging and what you're getting. It was just, you know, and these places are booked every weekend, every year. And it's like unbelievable, you know. And
you think about having a wedding on the back of a truck then, that, you know, you can just drive your wedding to
these wedding venues, you know, for what they're able to charge. And, you know, they're basically just providing you the space and you got to bring everything else in. But I think that's a business that's not going anywhere. People are probably going to continue to get married for as long as we walk the earth. And I think whether it's a good economy, a bad economy, doesn't matter who the president is, people are still going to get married. I think it's pretty much a recession-proof type business. You know, the pricing might fluctuate depending on, you know, how the economy's doing. But for the most part, I wouldn't see that business going anywhere. Like, it seems like a solid, solid business.
I can't disagree with any of that. I think the USA is a fabulous country, and I think it's had many great days before, and it will have its best days without a doubt to come. It's for you folks to make your decision in terms of that, and I'm going to declare zero opinion in public in terms of what I think is either best or otherwise for you as a nation. It's not my place really to do that, but you know, I have a lot of relatives in the USA, and yeah, you know, we did that normal thing of we were bad immigrants. We got stuck in around or near Liverpool, and so yeah, there was part of the family that had a liner ticketing agency and baggage handling agency. So and there were emigrant agencies really within there. So we possibly helped a whole number of people in the USA in terms of that part of the family to be able to actually land in there. And my apologies to your indigenous population as a result of that. as well. But hey,
yeah.
What's the biggest challenge that you think you have in front of you?
Biggest challenge I think in front of us is, you know, I think finding good people. It's not easy. You know, luckily I've had the opportunity and the staff that we have and the kind of ecosystem, I guess you could call it, of who we're working with on both our customers and our carrier side. They're all really good people. And obviously the goal is to grow and trying to find great people that can fit into that ecosystem without kind of disrupting what's already there. You know, obviously nobody wants to ruin a good thing, and trying to find great people to add to that ecosystem seems to be, you know, really difficult. Obviously there's no one place to find great people, right? And it's like, there's no manual for that. There's no textbook for that. So I think that's one of the hardest things for me, at least moving forward, is continually to find great talent that is going to mesh well with the talent that we have.
I'm absolutely clear that the logistics, the trucking, the transportation industry can offer great and reliable incomes and progression as far as people are concerned. And sometimes it doesn't get considered. You know, did I consider it when I was in school? No, I didn't. And I actually regret that I didn't. But the truth of the matter is we were doing a really bad job at saying, okay, there's this incredible industry that magically, and it is like magic, it delivers everything when you need it, in the quantity that you need it, for most of the time, at a pretty damn low cost. And actually, it makes everything happen. So why, oh, why, oh, why wouldn't you want to be involved in something that is, you know, as magical as that is? I think we need the best minds to come into it that really do think about new future, because I think we have some challenges. I really do. So coming to that future, I would like you to perhaps consider going into the fortune teller mode now. And if I was asking you to think about what do you see as maybe the next 5-10 years or so for you and your business and maybe the industry overall, what's your prediction?
For the industry overall, looking into the crystal ball, as I say, I'm looking for a better market for our carrier group, something that's a little bit more sustainable, a little bit more even keeled. You know, obviously nobody has control, but the violent upticks and the violent downturns are really bad for everybody. They're not great for, you know, the customer or the carrier. I mean, on one side or the other, somebody's taking advantage of that uptick or that downtick, but something a little bit more constant, consistent, even keeled, I think would be better off for everybody. So that's what I'm looking for the industry. For us here at ATS, we're looking for small, consistent, structured growth. I like to use the crawl, walk, run approach. There's really no better way, in my opinion, to grow your business. You know, landing a new customer, I always try and start small. Like, hey, let's show you what we're capable of, how we do it, how we operate. And that way we can understand what you need as a customer and go, let's say, from 5 loads a week to 10 loads a week to 20 loads a week. Rather than starting us off at 20, we're not able to provide the service that you require. We're not giving you what you need, updates or whatever internal system, you know, whatever standard operating procedure you require. That to me is the best way forward for the growth that we want, small, consistent growth that is measurable and it's achievable, right? Because for every load that you add or for every amount of loads that you add, we're going to have to start adding staff to manage those loads. And being able to roll that out slowly, consistently, while still maintaining the service level that we expect our customers to receive from us, I think that's the direction that I want to go.
And it's sound for a small business to really look at that. And it really is difficult, because what we actually need to get best efficiency and best service is to have a smooth demand most of the time. And yet for all sorts of reasons, whether it's the economic cycle, boom, bust, whatever it is, bull, bear, or indeed that we're looking at seasonal. So it's Thanksgiving, it's Christmas, whatever else. There are peaks associated really with that. There are some peaks that we arguably, you know, we could control better. It always fascinates me, promotional activity. I think, do promotions drive sale? Yes. What do they do to your costs and what do they do to your profit? And I've been around a long time and I've yet to see people do that sort of balanced scorecard view in terms of what did we get. It is interesting, but I think that at a point of scale in terms of where you're at, and you're not small, you know, you're operating all the way across the US within your market niche, but it is a trial to be able to accommodate hugely volatile demands that are placed on us.
Yeah.
Well, I would suggest our folks in supply chain maybe need to get there, and more often sales and marketing perhaps need to get their head around that. But on the other side of that, you turn around and say, they're the customer and the customer's always king.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing to debate. So Colby, how does Colby relax at the end of a day? Because you're running a very busy business, anything associated with your business. And apart from dreaming about your new wedding events business, which I do think wedding events on the back of a truck would go down well. I'm hugely amused by that. I think that would be great.
Yeah. I love physical fitness. So I try and work out at least every day once for an hour. I feel that's been vital to me being really successful. I normally go at lunchtime, kind of gives me an opportunity to clear my head for a minute, regroup, get a little bit of an attitude adjustment when you need it, you know, when you've had a tough morning, and then, you know, play a little golf, spend time with my family. For me, a weekend getaway is about what I need to get recharged. And, you know, that's about it. Pretty simple.
So I know a little bit about the area because I've traveled through. You're sort of south of the Bay Area, aren't you? San Francisco Bay Area. And I've been to Monterey. So where would you go for your weekend?
Yeah, you know, Paso Robles is always super enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Santa Barbara. If you're looking to go somewhere a little bit further, there's Lake Tahoe, there's Napa, there's Half Moon Bay. I mean, we're kind of centrally located where, you know, within 6 hours or so, you can kind of be anywhere. And then our local airport here at Monterey has really stepped up. They got direct flights now, Phoenix, Vegas, Denver, San Diego, Dallas. So you could really, you know, if you really wanted to, you know, you could take a Friday flight and be back Sunday if you wanted to get out a little further. So that's been really nice for us.
And is Salinas really developed as a logistics hub? Is there a lot around you in terms of your competition or your trucking companies that are out there?
Yeah, I mean, we have our fair amount of asset-based local providers. There's also other smaller brokerages like as ourselves. But I think we don't have any more or less than any other logistical type hotspot in the U.S.
So, Colby, I'm bringing this to a close, and I always give, because I've asked you loads of questions, I'm going to give you one free question of me. So do you have a question that you'd like me to answer?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anybody that's a listener could benefit from this. From your experience, what would you say the number one thing that a freight brokerage could do to help win new business? What could they do?
Okay, there's a couple of things. For me, as being a buyer of these sorts of services in the past, the one key thing that I used to feel unloved and unwanted and uncared about, I'm joking, but the one key thing is that don't just come and talk to me when you might think I've got some business to place. Form the relationship over a period of time. Don't just assume that I'm not interested in having a conversation, and be persistent really with that. Bring me some information about what is going on in the market. You know, help me develop my view. Those are the things that I've seen most often, because when anybody's issued a tender for something, you know, everybody wants to talk to whoever's in control of that tender. And we're all very, very interested. But the truth of the matter is, during a tendering environment, it's really quite difficult to build a relationship. One, because they tend to be short of time. You've got that aspect of probity. So, you know, you don't really want to give any level of favoritism out really within the. And so it's a bad time to build relationships. So the key time, I believe, is to develop ongoing discussions with people, even though they're not doing business with you now. You're only going to change those views, maybe taking a 12-month to two-year plan to say, well, okay, I'm going to invest a little bit of time to try and get to know you a little bit better. That would be my advice.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's great, sound advice. You know, for me personally, that seems to work pretty well, is try and get a relationship going with somebody, you know, and not what's in it for me, it's what can I do for them?
Yeah, It really is. I mean, we're all used. I mean, I now run a small business. I'm used to hearing the answer no. And quite often the question I will ask, well, to help me in the future, tell me what would have made it a yes.
Yeah.
And those are the questions that I think are important to really ask and have answered. And the other piece of advice I would give anybody in this sector is, understand your processes. Map your business processes end to end.
Yeah.
And I would then turn around and say, if you're looking to automate, that will give you your blueprint to say, what can I automate and what shouldn't I automate? And I think that's really, really important to take that sort of end to end view would be my advice.
Yeah. That's awesome advice.
So, sir, thank you so much for joining us on the Logistics Collective. It's been an enjoyable conversation, although I'm probably overly focused on your new AWS business. So that's your advanced wedding services. No, you can't call it AWS because that'll upset Amazon.
Yeah.
But you know, it's been a really enjoyable conversation, and you've given this limey a little bit of a perspective in terms of how you're doing things within the fresh produce logistics businesses across the USA. So I've really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me so much. I really appreciate it, and hopefully we could do it again.
I really hope so, Colby. It's been an absolute pleasure. So that draws to a close our latest edition on the Logistics Collective, the podcast. If you want to have a reminder about any forward podcasts that we will have, we're on most of the podcast platforms, such as Spotify. So give us a like and follow there. And if you'd like to have a more intensive engagement with us, go to logisticscollective.com and you can send us messages, voice messages, anything you want, really, in terms of the. And if you're interested in finding more about what Colby does, I'm absolutely sure we'll have some links down below in the description here for you to find out more about ATS. So thanks again. And well, I would say from me, good evening to California.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by LeGuru.